to bring greetings in Jesus' name, and it's good to be together and to bring our needs to the Lord. And appreciated the devotional meditation, and I don't know how much you thought about it being a challenge to you, but it is to me. I remember different times, especially in thinking, now really, what am I trusting in? And I will have to admit that trip like we took, time that we had in Bangladesh, is another one of those times when it helps us to focus on what we're trusting in. For myself, it gets me out of my comfort zone. You're not quite sure what to expect. I guess I'm probably a bit of a sticker for that. I like to know what to expect before I get there, maybe more than some people. Some people don't mind plunging in, others do more, and I think I tend to be a bit more that way. Don't mind doing things when I know what to do, but when I'm not sure, that makes me uneasy. And it does help you to recognize where your trust really is. And I thought I'd begin with a couple verses and then move into a few things about Bangladesh and then how what we did over there. And if we have time, I'd like to open it up for a few questions. So think about those questions as we go along. I may have a couple questions too for you as we go along. First of all, I thought of Matthew 28, and it was already referred to, the last three verses there. When Jesus came and spake in verse 18, it says unto them, saying, all power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen. That's a wonderful promise, but it's a wonderful, and it's a great command as well. And I think that's important as we think about going out, whether it's to our neighbor right down the road, or whether it's to somebody in another state, or somebody in another country, or halfway around the world like Bangladesh is. Do we recognize that it is Christ's command to represent him, that it is his command to teach? He says, go, because I have power. Teach all things. Teach them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. Notice it's not all things that you have decided how to relate to these things, or all things in your culture. Cultures are different, things are different, but certain things don't change. Those things, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And again, I've been impressed with the teachings of Jesus and his example, and challenge was to whether we are, and I think we are by and large, but whether we are following that or something else. Certainly we need to make applications to it, and certainly it's right to do that. And many things are the same regardless where you go, but in certain cultures we do face certain things, and we were reminded of that as we were there as well. Another verse yet, two verses yet, I'd like to refer to and go more directly into our time there. And that's in Acts 10, verses 34 and 35. And you, I think, recognize the setting here. This is when Peter was asked to come and share with Cornelius. And we remember what happened before that, how he had that sheet come down and was told to rise and kill and eat the things that were totally forbidden to a Jewish man to do, and how he related to that. And finally, when he got there, asked them what they wanted him for, and it was explained. And then Peter said in verse 34, he opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons, but, and notice this verse especially, but in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. That applies to us in this country. That applies to people in Bangladesh. That applies to people in Africa. That applies to people all over the world. Every nation, he that fears God and works righteousness. Those two things are essential. Yes, there's ways that that's worked out. There's ways that that affects life. And in many ways it's the same, and in some ways it's different when we go to different countries. Well, moving on to a bit more in relation to directly to the work in Bangladesh and going there and being there, I have a couple questions for the school-age children here first. See if you know your geography. What continent is Bangladesh in? Who knows? Somebody raise their hand. School-age children first, at least. I think somebody of you should know, and maybe the teachers ought to take notice if you don't. All right, Chad? Asia, that's right. I think you probably studied geography enough that they know that there are seven continents. North America is one of them, and that's where we live, and Asia is one of them, and that's where Bangladesh is. Now, does anyone know what countries border Bangladesh? Again, if your school-age children know it, good. If there's someone a little older than that wants to offer that after they give the school-age children just a little bit of time. Anyone know what countries border Bangladesh? And that's a little harder question. I realize that. And I'm going to have a couple harder ones yet, and I might have to answer. India is the main one. There is one other one. And I'll give you a hint. It's the reason for the refugees that are in Bangladesh, or it's where they come from. Myanmar is the other country that borders it. It's just down on the southeast corner. India actually wraps around Bangladesh and comes, it's all the total, the western side. There's water on the south. India goes around the whole western side over the north and comes partway down the eastern side of Bangladesh. And then we have Myanmar on the southeastern part. The Indian Ocean reaches basically up there. It's the Bay of Bengal that is right in the bottom end of Bangladesh that borders the southern side. It's all water along the southern side of Bangladesh. All right, what size is it? How does it compare with maybe a state in the United States? How does it compare with Pennsylvania as far as land size? Anyone want to know, want to guess? Well, I won't take a lot of time. It's a little bit bigger than Pennsylvania is land size. It's closer to the size of Illinois. But the interesting thing is the population of Bangladesh is almost just a little bit less than half of the whole population of the United States. And it's all in a country just a little bit bigger than the state of Pennsylvania. They all live in a country a little bit bigger than the state of Pennsylvania. There's almost 330, I looked it up, and 328 million, some million, is the last estimate of the U.S., and it's 161 million estimated to live in Bangladesh. It's a very densely populated area, and anyone who visits there will tell you that that's one of the things that impresses you. People everywhere. There is just people everywhere over there, wherever you go. And if you want a concentration of people, the city of Dhaka is one of the most intense there is in the world. 20, 30 million people in one city. Anyhow, a few interesting things about the country. The language there is Bengali. And I guess Keith here can speak it, but I don't know if there's anybody else here that can or not. I can't. I can only say a couple words. And that's the thing that I suppose bothered me about as much as anything about being in Bangladesh was inability to communicate with the people there. Now, there are some who do know English. Most of their English is a little hard to understand. There's a few people that have real good English, but very few. most of them don't have much English. Makes quite a challenge to go out and do the shopping and have places where you have to get messages across. We did have two on our team that knew Bangla, one especially that knew it very well, which was a help, there's no question about it. All right, maybe just a little briefly, you might wonder what this is all about, why we do it, and there's other people that could explain it better. But the basic reason behind it is to expose the people of Bangladesh to Christianity. But you're not allowed to go to the country for that specific reason. The country is a secular country, but it has an official religion of Islam, and that is very much obvious as you're there. One of the first things you notice when you're there is the prayer calls that go out, what is it, five times a day? I think it's five times a day these prayer calls go out from the Muslim mosques, and they have some kind of a guideline that no one should ever be out of earshot of the prayer call when it goes off, and so the mosques are fairly closely, I'm not sure exactly, I should have counted how many, it's four or five of them there in Salah that you can hear, especially in the morning about 5:30, depending on about the time the sun comes up, I guess. I'm not sure when it is exactly, but they aren't exactly at the same time because you can hear one start and it goes and goes for a long. Pretty soon you hear another one start and another one, and they're it's very obviously a Muslim country. But Salah, where we were, is more Hindu than Muslim people there. I think I'm right on that. It's very clearly Hindu influence there, which it's close to India. India is just to the north, not real far, and just to the east, not real far. Again, not real far, but it takes a couple hours to get there, at least over the road. Travel is quite challenging there. And so we go to teach English as a second language. The official reason for going is to teach English as a second language to the people. They want that, they desire that, because English is the official international language. Not because it's the easiest language, not because it's of any, the basic reason is because of the countries that speak it. They have a great influence in the world, and somehow or another, there we come back to this thing of trust and feeling like we are part of a very important country, and we are. It's pretty nice when you come back to the country to know that you have a U.S. passport, and it makes it easier to get into the country. There is no question about it. But English is an important language. It actually opens up a whole new world to those who learn it. And so the desire is to teach English. They teach it in the schools all the time. That's part of their curriculum, but they really don't know how to speak it, most of them. They don't know how, even the English teachers aren't all that good at speaking English, interestingly enough. And so they go to teach English as a second language, spoken English as a second language. The way it's done is there's a team put together of house parents and three young brethren and three young sisters to go and teach in the public schools. A day in the life there is I didn't get you there, but that's a process of 6 or 8 hours of travel, actually 10 or 12, maybe depends how it goes, of all kinds of different ways, from bus to CNG, which stands for compressed natural gas, which is a little buggy that looks almost like a rickshaw, but not quite. And then you have the easy bikes that also look a little the same, but they're run by little electric motors. And then you have rickshaws, which are pedaled. Some of them are run by electric motors, too. You have motorcycles, you have boats, And right now, again, they're back to using boats very much. The 3 months that we were there, January, February, and was supposed to be all pretty much all of March, which we got that short-circuited a bit, there's not near as much water, and it's much easier to travel across land, although in some ways that's harder. When you get on the boat, it's kind of a smooth ride, and you just ride in on the water, not real fast, though. Maybe you'll have some questions about that along the way. But anyhow, getting back to a day in the life of the team there. The classes they had this year, some years they have 6 days. They actually have school 6 days a week there. They have Saturday off, but all the other days are school days. But our team had Friday and Saturday off this year, which made it a bit easier. So they taught in those schools in the schools 5 days a week instead of six. They had two different schools. They went to the one in the morning and one in the afternoon. But anyhow, in the day, in the morning when we got up, the team would get up and do the washing before breakfast. Washing consists of taking the clothes up on the roof, getting buckets of water, putting soap in a bucket, and running a plunger up and down. And at least according to some people's direction, you're supposed to do that 100 times before you stop going up and down to clean it. Other people talk about counting by tens when they do the 100 times, but I'm not quite sure how they did it. But the team, always each morning, they would get up there every day. 7 days a week, they did the washing because there needed to be room to hang up the clothes on the roof. And after finishing that, we would have breakfast and worship, and then they would leave about 8:30 in the morning to go to the first school. They started out riding motorcycles for a little bit, and it wasn't dependable to find rides, and so they started walking. They had about a 3 mile walk to the school, but they started just walking, not even trying to get motorcycles, which of course that was cheaper, a little bit harder, but cheaper. And they actually did walk there. They were coming back to town for a week or two, and then they found a path that went from the one school to one village to the other village, which again was probably between 3 and 4 miles. I planned to walk with them on that one, and I never managed to get that done. But they would go to the school, teach for an hour. I think they taught from 10 to 11 in the morning. Then they went about 3 miles, maybe had a rice meal or other invitation in between there, and got to the other school at 1 o'clock and had class till 2 o'clock. The classes, as I said, were Sunday through Thursday. So that makes a special challenge to keep Sunday Sunday. It was really hard over there to keep it feeling like Sunday. We put special effort into that, which we were told to do, but it's kind of tough. Saturday we had the Bengali church service, and that was basically in that language unless one of us had to talk, and then it was translated. There is a small group of people there, a very small group of people there as in their church there. And then on Sunday, we would try to have I took a Sunday school book along and made photocopies, and we discussed the Sunday school lesson a little bit. And then the team usually did the dishes after breakfast before they went to school, but on Sunday mornings, my wife and I did that so that they could go. So we had a little more time to discuss the Sunday school lesson together and make it a bit more like a church service. But it was somewhat difficult to do that because you're buying rides, you're buying this and that sometimes. We tried hard not to do any buying on Sunday, but it didn't quite always work that way. As far as our responsibilities, my wife, of course, had the cooking to do, basically did most of that. The team did, the girls made donuts one day, and a couple of the times the boys had a barbecue up on the roof. We could make a little fire up there right on the top on the roof and and do either chicken, or we actually did have a little bit of beef. It's a little hard to come by there because of all the Hindu influence. Because of the Muslim influence, I didn't see a single pig in the country of Bangladesh where I was. Now, they say there is some places, but I didn't see a single one. A lot of cattle walking around. You went walking right through groups of cattle and sheep and whatever else, chickens and the like, right along the street and the road and so on. It's quite a different situation, but my wife had the responsibility of doing the cooking, which I helped her. I had the responsibility to go out to town and buy the food and do that without really being able to communicate. Elijah Zimmerman was the one who knew the language well, and he took me out one of the first mornings, and we went to a couple places and bought a few things that started out, and then we get back and he says, now you're comfortable doing this on your own now? No, I wasn't comfortable, but I did anyhow, and it worked. Worked out. He did help out different things. Sometimes when you needed to discuss things, you needed an extra ability to communicate. But we were made out on that. We didn't get in on quite as many rice meals as the team did. They actually got tired of it sometimes because you had two and even three in one, what was supposed to be one meal time. And a rice meal consists of, I don't know if I would get it all, but it's basically rice. That's their staple. And then you have real hot stuff to put on it. What do they even call it? You might have to help me on that. What are they, that green stuff that they put on that's not so real hot? That's not quite so hot. Then they have some kind of meat in a sauce, it's hot. If you're used to hot things, really hot things, you might not think so, but it's fire. There's no question about it. And some of us, that's a little harder to handle than others. But we did go along sometimes to the rice meals. We did go along to visit. But again, it's the difficulty of the language barrier that you can hardly communicate. Did have one local church brother there, just lived within sight of where we were. If you went on the roof, you could see his place. And he spent a fair amount of time there. He'd often come in there, and he didn't have much English at all, but we tried and tried, and we could get a few things across. And I learned a couple Bangla words from him, and he learned a few and was studying English, and we get them across. But I kind of felt sorry for him, because toward the end when we were leaving, he said, he was shaking his head and said, house empty, me empty. He just feels the loss of that sharing there. His wife is not a believer at this point anyhow. As far as the church there, it's very, very small. I didn't realize it when we went along over in November that we actually got in on the very first communion service that they had. It's only, let's see, there is a few imported people, and they are imported there to do the salt work. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that, the Shared Accountability and Lending and Teaching, SALT, Shared Accountability, Lending and Teaching. It's an effort to help them to learn how to use their money wisely. They actually have they collect money from each one, and they kind of keep it together and make loans to themselves. And it's a very interesting and very good way of doing it, I believe. There is no seed money put into it from here. The only money that goes into it, they do pay the ones who do the work, and they do supply the material. But as far as the money that is used to learn out, all comes from the local people, and they really don't have very much to start with. But I do appreciate that. But there is a few there that have been imported for that work. They're at least half of the church there. There is at least one, two, three, four at least four local people that are part of the church, but the church is only about 8 or 10 people, if that. It's very small. There's a young man there, a young married man there that has one little girl, Monique is his name, and his wife and he are part of the church there. He's one of those that was brought in. He's actually the coordinator for the salt work, and he is doing a very good work there, but he's only 25 or 26. 26, I guess he is. He was actually raised in a Christian orphanage as a child, but he had turned very rebellious. And I never did see the picture of him that when he was, before he came into the church there, he says he was really wild, and different ones have said it was that. But he is definitely a very good part of the church, a very good contributor to the church there, and the others are. But there's a lot of challenges when you face a society like that and the things that that they face. It is largely what is often called a shame society, where law and order comes by shame. So in other words, if you can get away with doing wrong, you're sort of smart, you're a pretty good person, you're all right. If you get caught and you shame the other part of the community, it's really, really serious. Our society has been a guilt society. In other words, when you do wrong, you should feel guilty. And we're shifting more to a shame society probably. But it is interesting how a shame society works, and it is something you need to reckon with when you go there. And we had a real good example of that right before we left, when we went out to the school. They were, well, because of all this shutting down, we couldn't have the normal program we were going to have. But they did have a little time together to share the certificates that they got for doing these classes, these English classes. And again, certificates are a very important thing over there. But anyhow, we were sitting in Rodney Hurst's class, one of the team teachers there, and he was passing out these certificates, and they had a designation on it. The few that had perfect attendance were marked perfect attendance, and the rest weren't. And he was passing these out, and he passed out the one, and he said about not having perfect attendance, and they started arguing with him. They said they did, and he knew they didn't. He just kind of left it go. And we didn't realize what was happening, but pretty soon my wife and I moved on to the next class, and he said, you know, it's good you did, because once you left, they were willing to admit it. But it was a shame to admit that they had missed these classes in front of these important people. It's like, the truth is the truth. But and others were standing up for him and saying, no, they didn't miss. And he just kind of wisely left it said. And once we went, well, then they were fine, as long as we weren't knowing that they had failed to have perfect attendance. And we think, well, that's such a small thing. But that's the way a shame society works. It's like a shame to have important people know that you didn't accomplish what you thought you should. I have one more story that I'd like to tell you yet, and then I want to open it up for questions. I don't want to keep you too long. And that was our effort, our ability to use the shame society and to show what forgiveness really is. I don't know how many of you heard, but we had thieves while we were there. And when we first found out about it, we had taken one weekend, we took a little trip to the tea gardens, to a different part of to the east there, where the tea is grown like they do in India, and the same. That was an interesting time there. But when we got back, I needed to get some more money. When you go there, you're given 4 lakh taka for your whole time there, and hopefully that covers the costs of everything that you get. Now, I know you're in the dark when I say lakh taka. First of all, I have to explain what a lakh taka is. Taka is the money that they use, and a lakh of taka is 100,000 taka. It's 1,000 taka bills all stapled together. It's locked together, I guess that's why they call it that. I'm not sure, but it's called a lakh taka, and we get 4 of them. They are worth about a little over $1,100 a piece. So for $4,000, 8 people can live in the country, travel around and use public transportation and all. And actually, we didn't use that much. We didn't even use quite 3.5, except we had one of them stolen. Got back and I went to look. I had was using the one and it got all, and I went to the next one and I realized there's one missing. There was 2 lakh taka in my container that I had it in. There was only one there. It was just as pure and everything looked perfectly in order. Everything was just like it had been. The container that it was in was right where it was. Everything looked fine. But I noticed that somebody had counted through and counted, and they had it split. They had it opened up. The one had been all together, and it was opened up, and half of it was still stapled together, and the other half was loose. I counted it, and it was all there, but it was only 1 instead of 2. One was missing. Well, we got a little concerned that maybe one of the local Christians, because they knew the code to get in the room, it was a combination lock on the door, and we were a little bit concerned that maybe it was somebody of them that had gotten into it, but we decided to just keep it quiet and not say a whole lot about it and just go on from. And as time went on, we started to realize that stuff started missing from our rooms. 4,000 taka got missing from one of the boys' stack, and 3,000 from one of the girls', and then pretty soon we had things being shifted around in the rooms, and we weren't sure what to do about this or what was going on, and it was happening while we were there. And there's a couple young fellows, two young fellows that had come in early on, and we didn't really know what was going on, and they wanted to go up on the roof and wash their feet off. And it seemed just a little bit strange, but there was people doing that. There's other people lived down below. They washed their things upstairs. They would take baths up there, and there was different things that, and we didn't really know if these fellows belonged there or not. But I was getting more and more suspicious of them, because different times you come up the steps and they'd be heading up the steps to go wash their feet. That's like, something doesn't seem quite right here. And I followed them up, and they had to know that I was getting a little bit suspicious of them. I followed them up the one time and they didn't make any more of it. But then one day those chickens had come. We buy the chickens live, and then there's somebody butchers them, cuts them, kills them, and brings them to us, and the chickens had come, and I had been upstairs. We sleep up on one floor and live on the next floor. I had been upstairs in the room doing some work with finances and so on, because you have to keep track of every taka that is spent and what it's spent for and exactly what it's spent for, like not just groceries, it's tomatoes or bananas or that type of thing. But anyhow, I was doing that, and my wife said, she needed me to come down for the chickens, and I went down there and left my room open, and I came back up, took a little bit of time, I came back up, and these fellows were on there, and one fellow was just rounding the corner. Like, there's a hall goes back, and the girls and boys' rooms, and ours was the back of the hall. Just rounding the corner and went up the roof, so I followed him up the roof. Then he wanted to take a picture of me, and it was a strange one, because most times when they want to take pictures of you, they want a selfie. They want you on it too. They just took it of me. But I just followed them down, and I didn't have anything till I followed, they started down the steps, I went back to the room. When I got back there, it was obvious that they had been back there just rooting through things. And they had pulled stuff out of where the money had been. Of course, once I had lost the money, I moved it to a different place. I hid it somewhere else. And they were obviously hunting for it. And so I went downstairs fast. And they were just heading out the walk. And I said, come back here. Back, come back. And they started back. And one of them tried to go off. And there was other people around. They motioned to me. You want? I said, yep, they want them back. So they sent them back in. And they came back inside. And the man down at the bottom downstairs, he knew enough. He knew pretty good English. And I told my wife, I said, you need to get the doctor's husband. He was the one that knew the English. I said, I need somebody that can communicate here. So by that time, while they were inside, and there was 15 or 20 people all around, and they pulled the gate shut and had them penned in there. And and I explained to them a little bit, and they said, well, do you want to get the police? Well, I didn't know if I really wanted to or not. Didn't really want to, and didn't really have the number right then. And I called Elijah and wondered what he thought. And he said, well, get Monique to come over. So I called Monique, and that's the local man there. And he took him a little bit in the meantime while they were back and forth there, and different ones that congregated there. And pretty soon when he came, why, he took the two young fellows upstairs. And there's a couple other people went along, and we went up. Well, a little side note in there was that Rodney had been sick that day and was in his room, and he heard somebody, he thought it was me, come and try to get in his room. Well, he had it latched from the inside. There's latches on the inside and latches on the outside. And the setup I don't like, because the outside latches, you can latch it and lock somebody in. And so the fellow tried to get in, it was locked, so he locked the outside. Well, then Rodney ended up getting locked in. He heard him go back to my room, and he's like, well, why did Harold lock me in, lock the door, and then go back to his room? This doesn't make any sense. In the meantime, we were tied up, and finally I realized I had a message from him. Actually, he called me, I think, and wondered about being left out. So anyhow, they had locked him in because they couldn't get in his room. And so anyway, they brought him upstairs, and there was one man from there. They were not from the town there. They were from a town about 5 kilometers away. And one man that was from that town was there as well. Now, he was living in Shala, but he was from that town. And he was really upset because they had shamed him because he was part of that town. And it was quite a... Monique was talking to him and telling him, and I said, you know, they were saying, well, they didn't have anything. And fortunately, that time, they didn't. They hadn't found anything. Their bags were empty. But he was telling them about it. I said, we can't get it back, but we're ready to forgive them. But they must change, because this is bad. This is not good for your life. You need to change your ways. And this man that was from that town, he was... like I said, he was shamed, and when they'd say they didn't do this or they didn't do, he'd go over and just cuff him. I mean, he hit him excited, that one fellow especially, he just cuffed him like this it had to hurt, and he grabbed the hair and yanked him around, and Monique kept trying to stop him, and finally, after about 4 or 5 times of doing that, he actually did listen to Monique and not keep doing that to them, but we didn't get any money back. They didn't have any then, but the police did come to Elijah later and say that we should have reported them, but they never came to me to try and find anything more out, and so I'm not sure how serious they were about it. But anyway, it's a little bit like was mentioned this evening about how the police sometimes are there. But there are a very nice people. They're not so intense like Africans are. I've been to Nigeria various times and felt much more on edge in Nigeria than I do there, because they are more mild tempered than the blacks people, but their skin is dark and they feel inferior because of it. It's very sad, but When we were over there in November, that time we were sitting there, and one of them, I can't even remember for sure who it was. I had my sleeves rolled up, and he did too. He had short sleeves on or whatever. He put his arm up beside mine and said, better, pointed to mine. I said, no, not better. Different, but not better. I said, we're the same. And it is something that needs to continually be promoted, that we are not better. We do have some advantages, but they are respected and loved by God just as much as we are, and they can teach us some things that we should learn as well. Well, I've probably used up the time. Does anyone have some questions or anything you'd like to share? Keith, maybe you'd like to share some things. Any questions?
You said about the church being small right there now. Do I understand there are two churches over there?
There's more than two.
Okay.
Do you know how many it is? Three, four? Okay, up in the Northwest, there's a number of churches there.
I think there's like 80 believers or something, that's how there's 6 churches.
Yeah, there's less than 10 there at Shala. It's fairly new. This is only the third year they're there. I kind of enjoy the area there. It's a very nice area. It becomes an island now. It's pretty much of an island again. They've sent me a couple pictures and the flood, the river that you walk down a steep bank 20, 25 feet to is up to the top of that bank now. It's hard to believe. It's like Tito just sent me a picture here the other day and crossing the Paharpur, and it's just clear up to the houses. And it was way down when we were there. But yeah, it is an interesting challenge to, you know how to relate to it. How much do you import our applications, and how much do you recognize that their cultures are different, and yet there are some things that are the same, that need to be the same. There need to be applications made. They may not be identical to ours, which they're not. Any other questions yet? Lloyd, maybe you had something you wanted to say. You've been over there. But I realize I have a very small, I'm a little bit like the blind man and the elephant. I've probably felt one leg, and I don't have a very good picture. I've been in Dhaka, and I've been between Dhaka and Shala, and we went on that little trip over to the tea gardens, but the rest of Bangladesh I have not seen, so I only have a picture of a small part of Bangladesh. They're very friendly people, though. There's no question about it. They're not hard to get along with, by and large. It is a good work, I believe, but a very challenging one. And hopefully we can make at least a little difference in that country. I could have told you about our trip home. That was quite of an adventure too, and a boost to our faith in God, how at the nick of time, a couple times, we were able to get on the very last flights out of the country to come home again. And somebody put a lot of effort into that as well. All right, we certainly do wish God's blessing on the work there and pray for them. They have their unique challenges, especially as they face the fact that most of the country is either Muslim, 90% is Muslim, I believe, the country, and about almost 10% is Hindu, very little other. So it is an interesting challenge as they relate to it, and it's a stigma if you leave, especially the Muslim religion. They face a certain amount of persecution when they do that, mostly from family. All right, thank you.